Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 10th, 2014. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You're back from another trip. Is that true?
I am. Yes, exactly. But, you know, you could say that almost every week, right?
I know. It's crazy. I don't know how you do it. I mean, it's like, do you, like, go to, like, Tampa International Airport, and they're like, hi, Mr. Long. You walk through the front door, and you're like, know everybody on the first-name basis? You must, I mean, it's crazy. They must be like, I know you got that special consideration thing where you can go, like, right through security and all.
TSA pre-check, baby.
Jeannie gets pre-checked, too, and I don't. It drives me crazy because she went back to Connecticut a bunch for her family, all our issues were going on with her family and stuff. And it's like, she's like, I can go through if I want. And I'm like, yeah, thanks, you know? Drives me crazy.
Hey, I totally did that. I waited 30 minutes for my wife to get through on our last trip.
Nice. And what if something happens to her and you're on the other side? You can't do anything.
Hey, I'm waving at her.
You're such a gentleman. Chivalry is not dead, apparently.
I'm not waiting 30 minutes in line with all you animals that I can walk right through.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm carrying livestock with me. So what happened on your trip?
So actually, it was a kind of a fun trip. I don't do too many of those anymore. But I went up to see my Buckeyes pummel Maryland in their Big Ten debut, which is a lot of fun. But of course, since I was up there, I decided to first time up in that area since the new Horseshoe opened, Horseshoe Casino in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And so I stopped in there and saw our good friend Anthony Chester, who's the poker room director. And very, very nice room. I mean, I haven't been to too many not nice Caesars Entertainment rooms. I mean, they're all obviously very elegant. But one of the things I was telling Anthony when I was up there was, one, I asked him whether he got to pick the photos on the wall, because you remember I said a couple weeks ago about the whole, you know, Howard Lederer full tilt. Now, obviously, none of those were up there. But he said he didn't get to pick those. But but it was an interesting mix. They went all the way back to, like, Bobby Baldwin on some of them. All the way up to, you know, well, Greg Mershaw obviously has a prime spot there because it's Baltimore, right?
Yes.
What's slightly different about this room than I think some of the other newer Horseshoe rooms that I've seen is a little airier, a little higher ceilings maybe.
So they're pumping in like what? They're pumping in like more oxygen for the room, or
exactly
airier? Yeah,
you actually float to the room. Yes. Yes. But no, it's I don't want to say the other ones are claustrophobic, but I always get a feeling a little bit that they're a little bit more intimate.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know. But I'm like an eagle. I like to soar, right?
So yeah.
I like rooms with high ceilings, and they still have all the nice, you know, the chandeliers and all that kind of stuff, and a big, huge walk-in area, which I always think is nice, too. You know, one of the things I hate about rooms is when you walk in, and it's just a big glom of people waiting to get seated, and nowhere for them to sit, and it's, you know, you're jostling around. No problem there. They have a nice, big, open area for you to walk in, and So I think they're going to do some good stuff. Obviously, Anthony likes us, so I expect to do some see some Ante Up stuff up there, particularly with our Ante Up cruise out of Baltimore coming up in April. So, its location is perfect, I think. I mean, it's within walking distance of both the Ravens Stadium and the Orioles Stadium. So it's one more of those nice big anchors down in the harbor area. You know, definitely check it out next time you're in Baltimore, and let me know what you think. And then I left for there and drove back down to Dover Downs. I always like going to Dover Downs and Delaware. It's I call it like the little engine that could now, right?
Yeah.
You know, because everyone, like, you know, say competition is beating up on folks, but, you know, the director there, Pete McGuire, is honest about it. He's like, you know, hey, Maryland Live opened up, lost a big chunk of our business. RSU Baltimore certainly hasn't helped us with our business. Right. You got this new MGM room that's going to open in D.C. in 2 years. And so he keeps taking his licks there, but there's a lot of poker rooms around the country. When I travel, you get the sense that they've just given up in the face of big, huge competition. And they're like, you know what? We're just going to hang on until we can't hang on. We're done. And that's never been the case for Pete up at Dover. He's always looking for something new to do, new promotions, new tournaments. Just one of the scrappiest poker room directors out there. And I really like that because that's kind of Andy Up style, right? You know, we started this thing on a shoestring budget and had to be scrappy and claw our way to where we are. And I'd like to think we still are. So he's trying really hard there. I mean, it's not easy to get to Dover, but once you get there, it's a nice place, nice room, gorgeous hotel again. I got to stay there again this time. And of course, we had fun because when he heard us coming up, he got an emergency lottery approval because you had to get everything cleared by the lottery, though, right? To hold one of his famous Beat the Boss tournaments. And so I get to be one of the bosses, and Michael Young, our Mid-Atlantic ambassador, came over, and he was a boss as well, too. And then they put in two employees. And this is the first time I got to play the Beat the Boss tournament there, and I really like this. And this goes back to what I'm talking about being creative and trying to get people into your room in the face of tougher competition. So it ended up being a 4-table tournament at start, you know, and then had re-entries and things like that. But the number one seat at every table was one of the bosses. And Mike and I were what they called in it to win it, which meant that we could actually win money and stuff. The other two people, obviously being Dover Downs employees, couldn't win. Mm-hmm. So they were just in there as bosses. Knocked out any of us, you got $200 right there. Wow. Now, this is a $75 buy-in tournament, right?
Wow.
And it's a $75, it's a green chip bounty. So if you knock out any player, you get $25, including us. So really, technically, you get $225 by knocking out
Right.
I guess maybe that was just me and Mike, but the other people were 200 because they weren't in to win. So that's pretty cool. You knock out one guy and you've made money already in the tournament, right?
Yeah, and if you knock out a boss, I mean, it's three times your buy-in, essentially. It's
exactly
that's
right.
That's great, yeah.
And then every level, they swap the bosses around. So, you know, we got up and did
switch
little
seats,
musical chairs kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, so if somebody gets knocked out at one, then you're not sitting there the whole night with no chance again. Somebody else knocked out, right? So I thought it was great because you got an opportunity. And for me, it was great because I got to talk to a bunch of different people. You know, we had Mike Otwell, who won our Andy Up Cruise main events in June. He was there. Saw him. And then Bit Guru, one of our longtime listeners, made the drive out from Virginia. Was at our table and got to see him and hang out with him for a little bit. And then a bunch of our old cruise passengers, you know, because Dover Downs just floods our ships with players, right?
Right.
So it was kind of cool to move around. So this is the funny thing. This is the problem with this, though. I don't know. We're two levels in maybe when the first boss gets knocked out at, let's say, table 4. I don't know what the actual number was, right?
Uh-huh.
So, of course, the whole room's, because now it's $200 that's off the table now, right?
Right.
So then they move. So now one of the tables that has knocked out a boss doesn't have a boss anymore. And the table that knocked out the boss has a new boss. So this is where people are,
right?
Same guy that knocked out that boss, knocked out the next boss.
Oh, man.
And that was me.
Oh, man.
Shoved with Ace King. He had a huge stack, called me with pocket fives, didn't prove, boom, gone, right?
Wow.
So I re-entered, but I didn't have a new bounty on me, which is great. So he knocked out two bosses, right? Moving around, Mike Young gets moved there, knocks him out as well, too.
No way.
One guy knocked 3 of the 4 bosses out.
Oh, man. He made $700 just sitting there.
$650 just on the bosses. Not to mention all the other bounties he knocked out. I mean, he just had a massive stack, was calling everything. I think at one point, somebody counted he had $800-$900 out of this tournament before he even got to the money.
Oh, wow.
And I can't say for certain, but because I went down after I got knocked out my second time, which was brutal. I flopped a set of sixes, got two people to call in with flush draws, and of course the flush got there. Can you imagine that odds when you're going against two people going for the same flush?
Ugh.
So I got knocked out again, and it was too late for me to re-enter a third time. Probably good. So the Packers were on, right? So I went down to the sports bar and watched it, and Big Guru came down after he got knocked out and said it sounded like that guy got tangled up with the other chip leader on a bad call and lost and was a short stack at that point. So it's quite possible that guy didn't go on the cash at all, but...
would still make $650.
On a $75 buy-in tournament.
Jeez. That's crazy. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, and I should say all that money, all the Beat the Boss money is added by Dover Downs. So, I mean, talk about a very generous tournament for their players.
Sure, but, absolutely.
That's what I'm talking about there. I mean, you get when you're a small room facing all this competition, you got to step your game up and do some real scrappy things. And Dover Downs certainly is. So, highly recommend them if you're up in the area. Get over there and enjoy yourself at Dover Downs.
Absolutely.
Well, while I was up there, this story came out. Amaya Gaming, which we all know recently bought PokerStars and Full Tilt, announced that it's pulling out of 30 or so countries that are in so-called gray markets for internet gaming, meaning those countries have no laws against online poker, nor do they have any laws specifically allowing it, much like America was for a while, right?
Yeah.
Most of these countries, though, are small, located in Africa, Asia, and the Middle East. You know, one of them is Cuba, one of them is North Korea. You know?
Wow.
So the net effect is fairly minimal now. But now the question people are asking is when Amaya will eventually pull out of Canada, which is probably the largest gray market left in the world.
Well, what do you think about that? Not the part about Canada yet, because I don't get there yet. I want to get to the gray market reasoning. If you were walking down the street and you in America and you started whistling Dixie, you wouldn't know if it was against the law or not. You don't know there's a law on the books. You're not some lawyer. You're not some student. But if there is no law against whistling Dixie, then you're allowed to whistle Dixie. So why does it matter if there's not a law specifically regulating that? If you know what I mean? Here, when it was in this country, we kind of had a law that people interpreted to say it was illegal or not regulated. So that's what made them the bad actor and all that crap, of course, and then the whole selling of golf balls or whatever when they weren't. But really, why would you pull out of somewhere where they say, hey, we're not saying it's illegal, we're not saying it's legal and there's nothing wrong with it, or we're not saying there is something wrong with it? I mean, what's the – are they just that worried about – is it justified?
A lot of this is business practices, not so much legal thing, I think. I think what I'm getting from this company is that they're trying to be as above board as they possibly can, and that's not to say that the previous owners were not that committed to being above board. They probably took more of the view that you're taking, that, you know, hey, if it's not illegal there, then it's technically legal. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
This company, obviously, it's publicly traded, which holds it to a higher standard than family-owned, which PokerStars was before, right? Or privately held.
Privately, yeah.
So I think generally when that happens, there's a little more caution out there. I think the other thing, too, is this company is moving towards full casino gaming on its platforms, right?
Right.
You know, these are huge poker names, but they're working into, you know, roulette and craps and blackjack and things like that. And that tends to get people a little more worked up than just the poker. So I think they're probably just being overly cautious with an eye towards eventual success. It's tough to compare it to what happened here in the U.S. because really the bigger problem was selling those golf balls and things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can look at what the case is here in the U.S. and make a case that PokerStars may have cost itself a lot of money operating in this country beforehand based on the fact that it's been so hard for it to get back into this market.
Yeah.
After this happened, and I certainly don't think that, you know, Mozambique is all of a sudden going to create some kind of a problem for PokerStars there. But you never know, right?
Right.
So, and then I think the other thing too is it kind of it's almost a it could be argued a PR move in a lot of ways, right? Because the store is getting some pub and like, oh hey, you know, if you're on the fringe of all this and you're like, hey, this company looks responsible now. They've taken a look and they decided that they don't want to serve these markets, 30 of them too. Wow, I mean, this must be a, you know, a pretty responsible company, right? When really that doesn't mean much to the bottom line. Doesn't seem like right now.
Right, because so, you said there were minimal ones that probably didn't have densely populated people playing.
Yeah, exactly. Online. One of them was Afghanistan. I mean, yeah. Aside from maybe some troops there that have PokerStars accounts.
Yeah.
I mean, do you really think the Taliban is playing $5 sit and goes?
Right.
Online. But overall, by saying that they're pulling out of 30 countries that were laws are ambiguous, I think it does look responsible, whether it really is or not. And there's probably some PR value to it as well.
Well, it's just now you get move on to the question of Canada. Now you'll see if they're serious or not then, because if Canada truly is a gray market, they've got a lot of players up there, no doubt. So now you'll see if it's just if it was just window dressing or if they really are trying to be this legitimate casino, online site someday and have to do what's consistent. If they don't pull out of Canada, and Canada is a gray market, then it was all just window dressing, and people were just like, "Well, you were just saying that you're trying to show goodwill, but you really, you were going to lose any money by doing that."
True. Well, I'm interested to hear from our Canadian listeners on this as well too, because I didn't really, to be honest, know that Canada was a gray market. I thought there was actually some Canadian lotteries that were running online games up there and stuff like that. Maybe it's. Province by province or something like that. I don't know. But I'd be interested to hear what they think on, to explain more how the market is up there and what they think as well, too.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, if it is in the same vein as these other ones, it does smack of picking and choosing.
You can't just cherry pick the ones that are in the gray market and say, look how good we're doing when you don't do it all the way across the board then, That's interesting, especially since Canadian market has tons of they have casinos up there. They have a lot of online poker. I mean, we've always tried to venture up there ourselves, to see what we're going to do with our product up there because they have so much, to offer. But if they don't pull out of Canada, then it's just really for show, and it's not to be taken seriously. So we'll see.
Unless there's something else going on that we don't quite
understand. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, stories that you've seen have mentioned Canada. It's not like you're just pulling that out of thin air, right? I mean,
the company's being kind of tight-lipped on why they're pulling out of these other countries as well, too.
Okay.
So, I mean, people are kind of assuming just based on what we just talked about, right?
But yeah.
People from the outside looking in, they don't know what you and I talk about all the time, right? And sometimes things that we do seem like they don't make sense until they actually do eventually make sense, right? So it's the same thing with this company. There might be some internal discussions going on that people just aren't privy to, and once all that comes out, then I'm like, oh, okay, now I see.
Gotcha.
Who knows?
All right, we got some Annie Up updates. Don't forget now, November 1st to 16th, the schedule has been announced for our Annie Up Poker Tour series at Derby Lane here in St. Pete, Florida. The main event is a $150 buy-in with $250,000 guaranteed.
Wow.
You could bag your five biggest stacks. So obviously they're encouraging people to enter all the day ones. And you know what too is really cool about it? You can learn more information at annieupmagazine.com/Derby Lane. But the thing I like about it is, once you qualify for day two, they give you your 150 back.
Yeah.
So it's like you're free rolling to play the next day's one. You've already guaranteed yourself to be in the tournament again in day two to try to win this $250,000. A part of this $250,000, but that's so cool. And you get this if you entered five times and qualified five times, all five of those stacks go with you into one big ass stack. So they're calling it the accumulator, and we talked about how Dover Downs is trying to be original and unique to keep their people. This is a pretty unique tournament here. It's pretty crazy, and we're really really excited for it. So, but details on other Annie Up Poker Tour series that are coming up are on Pensacola Greyhound Track, Thunder Valley Casino Resort, and Palm Beach Kennel Club can be found at AnnieUpPokerTour.com. And don't forget, on the sixes, Papes, the Play Annie Up Intercontinental Poker Series, is our free online fan series. All of our diehard fans from the old days are still showing up, and they hold events on the dates that end with a six. So the next events, the Papes, don't forget, these are on PokerStars, is October 16th and the 26th. Details at AnnieUpMagazine.com/forum.
All right, each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast at antiupmagazine.com. If they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes store. And this comes from Janko in Australia. I'm totally changing my name to Janko after this show.
Is he unchained? I'm just curious.
Well, he'd probably chain because it's Django, right?
Yeah,
Janko. So yeah, you got okay. The K in there. Like,
oh, okay.
No, but I love that name, Janko, man. I mean, no one messes with you if your name is Janko, right?
No, not a chance, dude.
I have no picture. He didn't send no picture of us, of him, and I would not that people send pictures of us. But I got my picture in my mind. He's like 400 pounds, nothing but muscle. Buds cut. Just, you know, cigar coming out of the mouth saying, hey, I'm Janko.
Man, it's kind of hard to be 400 pounds and nothing but muscle. I mean, 250 maybe, but 400, that's tough. He's a big dude.
Well, maybe he just eats egg yolks every morning like Rocky. all right, so here's what Janko had, right? He says, I'm in Australia and play online. I recently chopped a $5 buy-in tournament heads up. The situation was that we were eight-handed, and none of us had more than about 10 big blinds. I asked if people wanted to chop and got no love, so we kept playing bingo. Eventually got the four-handed, and I asked if anyone wanted to chop. I got little love, but still no chop. We get to three-handed, and finally someone else suggests a chop. So we paused the tournament to discuss. After 5 minutes and a greedy tripular winning something like 60% of the payout, we decided to keep playing. I ended up chip leader with a greedy player heads up, and he suggests a chop. Funny how that always works.
Yeah,
out.
Yeah.
We were around 55, 45 in chips, so I offer a straight chop. At this point, we are chopping $4,700, so I'm ecstatic with that price. No doubt. A $5 tournament? Sure.
Wow.
He agrees, but by the time the host comes to confirm the chop, he reneges on the deal. We end up playing it out, and I take it down in two hands. Awesome.
Wow.
So he says, aside from the obvious brag, I'd like to ask a couple questions. Do you think it's reasonable to keep suggesting a chop? And also, with my opponent reneging on the chop and then losing to me, were the poker gods angry?
Well, the reasonable part, there is nothing wrong with it. It's totally reasonable. If you continue to do it, though, I think you're starting to show too much weakness. You're going to make, especially when you're three-handed, you're going to make a good, for $5, I mean, you've made a ton of money. If you made $4,700 on chop, heads up, you know, if you would have made $4,700, I mean, you're making a decent amount of money anyway. So just play it out, or, you know, when they suggest it, then do it. But is it reasonable? Absolutely. I mean, if you want to keep saying, hey, okay, now it's two players, we're both going to get $4,700, you know, we'd be stupid to sit there and flip coins then lose an extra $3,000 or whatever it is for no reason.
Right.
So, no, I think it's absolutely reasonable to keep suggesting a chop. I mean, if you start to annoy people and it's clear they don't want to do it, and you might want to stop just because you don't want to tick off a bunch of people and have them play, you know, to target you, you know, or something like that. I mean, you know, but is it reasonable? Sure.
Yeah, I think it's a little different because it's online rather than live. Online, I think people in the chat box are like gnats. You know, I can kind of avoid them. So
yeah.
I don't really feel like it's annoying at all if somebody keeps chirping, chop, 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 right?
Yeah.
Live, it's a little bit different when some guy won't shut up about it. But that being said, I mean, he had every reason to think that a chop was proper, right? I mean, if you're eight-handed and everybody has 10 big blinds, that really is bingo at that point, right?
Yep.
It didn't sound like he got any better after that. So I think it's the right thing to do would have been a chop at that point. And it's unfortunate that no one else saw that, particularly the other seven people that ended up going out for less money, or six probably, that went out for less than what the chop was going to be. But I think the other thing too is that live in the rooms that I think are run very well, you have that initial conversation about a chop, and at some point someone votes on it, and the room says, you know, after this vote, we're done talking chop until the next person's knocked out.
Yeah.
So as long as you abide by that, if you don't sit there and I'm like, I can't believe you guys didn't chop, or I hope we chop the next time, that's where it gets really annoying at that point. But if you just keep your mouth shut and the next guy knocks out and go, hey, all right, time to chop again, I don't find any problem with that whatsoever.
Nope, me neither. And do I think that him finally losing to you or making the poker gods angry? No. No, I don't think that. I think it's strictly we were playing, like we said before, you're playing, you know, lottery poker here, and you know, the guy, just variance. I mean, if he had beaten you, would you say the poker gods were happy with him? You know what I mean? That's just crazy. So I'm
Do you think the poker gods in favor of card destiny?
See, I'm a poker atheist. I don't believe in any poker gods. So I'm clearly just believing in variance now. So that's what I think it is. I think the guy just caught up with him. The lottery part of it caught up with him. So.
But seriously, what a douche, right?
Yeah, well, come on.
Deutsche Bank, I'm sorry. I haven't used that term in forever.
Guys. It's all right. We're a mature audience now. We're all men now.
No, but Deutsche Bank is funnier. So.
Yeah.
I mean, I get the whole greedy thing. I mean, I don't agree with it, but we see that all the time, right?
Yep.
You know, hey, we do a chop. Everybody, yeah, we do a chop. Yeah, well, I've got slightly more chips than you, so give me a little bit more. No, that's not the idea of a chop. So at that point, I don't have a problem with, but, you know, people play like that, and some people want to play it out, and that's fine. I'm one of those that generally does. But then when you make a deal, and then by the time the guy comes over, you're like, I got cold feet now. I say we play it out. That's wrong, I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Once you say, hey, all right, we're doing this, and unless there's some misunderstanding about what the deal was, I think you got to go through with it.
No, I agree. It could be if they, you know, if they sat there and went back and forth like for an hour, and look, we're not getting anywhere. We're still 50-50. Clearly, you know, let's just do it. That's one thing. But, you know, it's not going to go that long. So just play it out. You know, stick to your word. Be a you know, stand-up player or whatever. But all right, call the floor. You find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game, not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com, and we'll have Annie Up Poker Tour Tournament Director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This is our good friend Nick from Lincoln. He says, I'm in early position, and the player to my immediate right opens his huge hand.
Huge.
I'm sorry. Opens his hand huge. How is that?
That'd be awesome. He just pulled out a knife and just cut right there.
He says, and I see ace-queen. He raises, and it's on me. I have ace-ace and want to get paid for it, but I know I need to tell him I saw his hand. I re-raise, and my plan is to tell him to fold if it folds around to him. Another player calls, and the ace-queen folds on his own. I win the hand, and then dealer tells the player that everyone saw his hand and needs to protect it. I realize that maybe the correct move was to announce to the dealer and player that I saw his hand before I realize that maybe the correct... Wait. Before I acted with ace-ace. It's not fair for me to know two other cards while other players do not. What was the best course of action to take?
Sam says, what I would do in this situation is notify the dealer immediately after he folds that you clearly saw his cards. This way the other player on the hand can be notified to what they were, and you would both have equal information. It's definitely not your fault that you have the extra information, but in my opinion, honesty is the best policy, and you will also never be accused of using the extra information to your advantage by doing this.
That's good.
Yeah, so I guess with the question, that's a great answer. But what happens if this guy doesn't fold?
Yeah.
And then you have to act, right?
And you can tell him, I saw your hand, and we all know what you have now? You can't do that.
Yeah, because that's going to compromise his hand, right? At the same time, you're stuck in this situation where you're benefiting from extra information that you shouldn't have. That's a tough call, I think, there, right?
Yeah, so if you say it right away, I know your hand... I saw your hand right away before anybody else does anything, then it's like, okay, the guy has the option to fold or not, and you don't have to share that information on the hand at that point, because it's not fair to then say, hey, everybody, he has ace-queen. He's over there playing ace-queen. You can't do that. So if it's his choice, if he chooses to play it, knowing that you've told him you saw his hand, then that's his mistake. It's already his mistake by not protecting his hand.
Right, but I mean, the bigger problem, I think, is the fact that you have information that the other people left act on the table.
Right.
Don't have, and you can't tell them.
You can't tell them, exactly.
I mean, you can tell them that you know, but you can't tell them what it is, right?
Right.
That guy continues to want to play. But again, I guess at that point, I mean, as long as you're honestly telling people you know, I mean, there's no penalty for you. There's nothing they can do to you, right? So at least you're just being upfront and honest.
Yeah.
Hey, I've got extra information. And
Is the dealer at fault there? At all?
You know, I'll tell you what I thought was curious about this was that the dealer waited till the hand was over to tell the player that everybody saw it.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you tell it at that point, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm curious about, because is the dealer part of the game, or is the dealer just outside the game and is only ruling?
Well, the dealer's there to enforce the rule. I think if you're exposing your cards, that's enforcing the rules. That's not getting into this kind of gray area that we seem to have in the call the floors all the time, where is the dealer active in the hand by doing this or that. I mean, if you're exposing your hand, you should be told immediately by the dealer not to do that. Now, again, that goes back to the same situation, though. If, let's say, you know, Chris Huge Hand Cosenza here is just flaunting his cards around, right? And the dealer rightly says, hey, sir, you know, please keep your cards private so people don't see it. But at that point, two other people have seen it, all right? And you go, oh, yeah, thank you, sorry, and then raise. The dealer can't do anything at that point.
Yeah,
right?
No.
Because your hand is still alive, and you know, unless they got some kind of rule in that room that you've exposed it and need to kill it, but and it's going to play out. But and that's where it gets unfortunate, because obviously these two people have information that the other six or seven people in the hand don't have.
Yeah.
And I guess you just got to play it out at that point.
Huh.
But again, it goes back on me as seeing it. You know, there's nothing more I can do than to tell people that I saw the hand, and I'm going to play based off that information.
Yeah, and we've talked about it before, where you tell the person, hey, I can see your hand. First time's free. Second time, you know, it's your responsibility. Now, if I see your hand, you know, I see your hand. And then so at that point, you're not telling everybody else what the hand is.
Yeah, see, and that's, I think that's kind of a problem, though, right? I mean, yeah. The different story I'm talking about is I'm announcing the table, hey, I didn't try to see his hand.
Right.
He held it up. I saw it. I can't unremember what he had in his hand.
That's right.
And he's still in the hand, so obviously that's going to happen. But I just want to let you know that, you know, I'm not trying to slyly profit off that information and being upfront and honest, but I've got a hand and I want to play it, and I'm going to play it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you guys can decide what you want to do based on that or not.
We got the Colleen O'Malley's move today. Here's part one again.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a 2-5 No Limit Hold'em home game. It's a pretty friendly game, but the players can be tricky. They love to value bet and float when the opportunity arises. Oftentimes, they really have nothing to go on when they do float, other than a prayer, that is. The blinds post, the under-the-gun limps, and it's folded to us in the MP with the Queen of Spades, Queen of Diamonds. The standard raise here is 3x, but we account for the limper and make it $20 to go. It's folded back around to the under-the-gun who calls. This player is one of these tricky ones that likes to float. He's got a good grasp on the game and plays the players well, sensing weakness and pouncing. He also has a strength in his bet sizing. He can put in the right amount to make you think twice about what his intentions are. He's got us covered by 100, 650 to 550. We go to a flop of the 9 of diamonds, 4 of hearts, tray of diamonds. The under-the-gun checks, and since this board isn't all that scary, we fire. There's $45 in the pot, and we make a $30 bet. Our opponent thinks briefly and calls. With about $100 in the pot, the turn is the Ace of Diamonds. This card isn't great, but once again, our opponent checks. Now, I might get crucified for this, but at this point, I'm more interested in pot control and calling a reasonable bet on the river than trying to gain information. We check. The river is the 4 of diamonds. But this time our opponent leads out for a quarter of the pot, $25. So, we've got a paired board with 4 diamonds and the second nut flush. Fold? Call? Or are we raising here?
I think the problem here is that we have no information based on the way this hand played out. I mean, we have an under-the-gun limp, which I think is always fishy. But after that, we just don't know much about his hand. The flop was safe enough that I think just about any hand would call or c-bet, particularly an under-the-gun limp, right?
Yeah.
And then when check on the turn, so no information really there. So now we're in a situation where any boat, quad fours, or the king-high flush have us beat. So call me a scaredy cat if you want, but I'm just calling here. I mean, we have no information where we stand.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for getting value when I get big hands, but in this case, a call is perfectly acceptable on the end to me. You know, we check behind the turn, and why'd we do that? Probably to control the size of the pot, right? So then if we had checked the river, if he had checked the river, your opponent, you know, what would we have bet? We probably would have bet, like, 25, so he bet 25, so a call is definitely in order, and a raise, I think, is asking for trouble, and a fold is just way too weak. 25
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Is just way too weak, so I think we need to just call here. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, so, all right, here we go.
Hello again. folding is the worst of these options. However, there's quite a few hands he could have that could potentially give him the King of Diamonds. Maybe it's pocket threes or ace nine, maybe ace four. If we raise him, I believe there's only two outcomes that could be achieved. He's going to insta-muck, or he's going to play back at us for a huge amount. I honestly feel like I'm happy with the size of this pot, and won't lose much sleep over it if we're beat. We simply call. Our opponent wraps the table and shows us the Ace of Clubs, Queen of Hearts. Ship it! Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying be careful out there. There are a lot of tricky players who will call you thin, hoping to steal it away from you on a later streak. I hope to see you on the felt.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. This guy obviously thought the ace scared us because we checked behind, right?
Yep.
And at that point, the way we played our hand, it was hard to put us on diamonds, you know, unless we had exactly what we had. So he probably was thinking he was value betting of what turned out to be a worse hand, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I fail to see any mistake in making this call. I don't see a raise here being the right thing. I mean, you know, in hindsight, you could do that, but you can't do that. It's the way it played out and the information we had. This is the right thing to do, and it worked out okay for us.
I wonder if there's any risk in him betting there. I mean, what would he have done if we raised there? Obviously, he can't call, right? But I guess that's what he was counting on, is knowing that we couldn't raise unless we had the nuts, probably, right? Or a really strong hand.
Yeah, I don't see us getting more money out of this guy, because the board pair, too. So we could have had a third four somehow, some random, you know, ace four in our hand or something that we were fooling with, you know, and then we hit a third four. If we raise, we're not going to get more money out of the guy, and we'll never... Now we got some information out of him and the same amount. There's just no way this guy can call a raise, I don't think.
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to figure out his thought process for betting there in the end, because his bet seems almost as risky as our raise had we decided to raise.
Well, we went check, so he probably, like you said, he probably figured it out that, you know, I hit the ace, you hit the ace. If you had had an ace, you would have bet it. Why didn't you bet the ace now? So, because you checked behind, his first thing to think is, okay, I hit my ace and you checked, so you're afraid I must have the best hand. Let me value bet it. I don't think there's anything wrong with his betting 25 there. You hit the ace in the turn, you check to see if he had an ace too. When we checked behind, he said we were afraid, so our ace is good. Let's get a value out of it, and we just called. If we raised, I think he would have said, you trapped me, and I only have a queen kicker. I'm going
to
fold.
Yeah, so. I guess that's what I'm wondering. Maybe he decided the 25 bucks was something he could afford to put in there in case he was wrong.
Yeah, I think.
Knowing that the odds were that we didn't have anything, and we'd fold. And if he did bet, then maybe he would be second best. Put in a $25 bet in there, we were more likely to fold than, and it wasn't worth putting 50 in instead of 25.
Yeah.
And if we raised, then he just knew he was dead, right? I don't know. Interesting.
All right. So did our opponent had ace queen?
Yes.
And the board was 9-4
tray ace four.
So we lose if we call. And he has an ace, right? And we had queen?
Yeah, we had the diamond flush, though.
But we had the diamond flush, right? That's what it was. It was diamond flush and we win. That's right. Okay, I'm forgetting. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, it was a little confusing to go back and look at that afterwards. Yeah.
That's right. So we hit the diamond flush is what was good. That's right, yeah. So, I think raising gives us a, you know, the king of diamonds could be out. So that's the thing. That's what I was forgetting to
say.
Well,
but you also had boats, too. I mean, yeah, and very boats. Well could have. I mean, I think a set would have, I mean, again, under the gun limp, it's such a weird range of hands that do that, right?
Yeah,
I think, and a lot of them are baby pairs that people are not comfortable raising with under the gun but still want to play. And then the way this happened, I think a set, any of these sets, was absolutely possible there.
Yeah,
and then the river card that gave us our flush would have voted them up, so I think that's why I was definitely more cautious there. And also, you know, a lot of people like to slow play aces and kings under the gun, you know. And
I mean, so, there's definitely a king of diamonds scenario that, you know, that we could have, you know, been up against, which is another reason not to raise on the end.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, so that's just another reason not to. And then for him to check that turn. You know, he hit his ace. That check's kind of interesting to me because now he's got, you know, maybe he wants to protect his hand. You know, I mean, he could be afraid of the diamonds, but it's still only the third diamond on the turn.
Well, I'm going to guess he was probably intending to check raise there.
Yeah,
which
maybe.
Is usually a problem, I think, right?
Yeah. Especially an ace.
I mean, because I think actually if you check there and you get a bet out of your opponent, then it shows that they're not scared of the diamonds.
Yeah.
Which case, then that helps you get some information right, too.
Yeah.
And if they check behind, then exactly what I was saying before, too. I mean, we're either scared of the ace or scared of the diamonds, and the diamonds get there on the river.
Yeah.
So then you feel a little bit more emboldened with your ace-queen to make that bet there.
Oof. Yeah, it seemed pretty simple at the beginning, but it's starting to get more complicated as we talk about it.
Yeah, it's just crazy when you get to the river and neither one of you really has a lot of information on your opponent.
Yeah.
Make this hand played out. I mean, I went back and looked at this 3 or 4 different times, and I'm like, you know, I don't think anybody knew where anybody was.
Yeah, there's just no real aggression in this. You know, there's just no way to really pinpoint anything on that hand. Huh. That's a good one. Nice way to go, O'Malley. That's a good hand.
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. And this comes from our old good friend Jay Grimes. And let me kind of wade through this email a little bit because he was out playing live. Playing some 1-3, did some well. And it says he got a call from his friend that you got to get in the 2-5 game. Fish are swimming, right?
Wow.
So he gets into the 2-5, and he says, in this room he's playing in, 2-5 game is uncapped. So I sit down with $485, because he was bringing some money from the other game, right? So
yeah.
He would bought in for 5 bills or something like that. The table's 8-handed, only one stack of similar size to him, a freewheeling devil. And if I know him, he started out with about 1K and seen a rather bad run of luck. The rest of the table is filled with old money oil barons. Wow. Need a little hype in there. Old money oil barons, .com billionaires, and trust fund kids. Where is this game?
What? Jeez.
Is it 2-5? I guess it's uncapped, so I guess 2-5 is probably the largest game there, but I don't see a lot of old money oil barons. .com billionaires and trust fund kids playing 2-5, right?
Yeah. That's crazy.
Oh, man, just for kicks, there's a sweet-looking grandmother in there, too. No hyphen sweet-looking either, but sweet-looking grandmother, too, has 5 1K chips and maybe a centimeter of 100 stacked tightly. Another $300 to $400 in nickels.
Jeez.
Let's see. He says, across the table, I see one of the regular adrenaline junkies who only feels alive when they're blasting away at pots. To them, money is meaningless, only a means to an end. An end wrapped in an exciting, crunchy, salty, sweet adrenaline that they crave. Food Network's on in the background. Hey, you know, I hate when the Food Network's on. I mean, this is one of my bigger problems, both at bars and poker rooms, is, you know, they have the sporting event on, right? And as soon as that's over, then the network switches to, like, reruns of Murder, She Wrote or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And no one notices except for me, and that's the only TV I can see. And then I gotta say, "Hey, is there anything else on?" All right. So anyhow, let me skip ahead here. During the first 3 orbits, I played pretty tight. I voluntarily put money into the pot only twice with pocket nines and king jack suited from the hijack. A little later, about the same chip counts I started with, I look down and find pocket eights in middle position. And this is our hand of the week now. And it's 8 of hearts, 8 of spades. Says the older gentleman to my immediate right had limped in for 5 and is on us now.
Oh, jeez.
So a lot of rich people, a lot of people that money doesn't mean anything. Middle position now, we have a fairly tight image and pocket eights with 1 limper.
I don't know. You know, sometimes I like to just limp. You know, I mean, I'm not always... you know, I'm not always going to raise when I come into the pot. I know a lot of people insist on doing that. But sometimes, you know, eights are real middling. I mean,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like almost just set mine. And I got billionaires around me. Why not hit a big set on them instead of trying to get outplayed or outmaneuvered or just out big stacked by these billionaires that can just do whatever they want? I got 500 in front of me. I'm not going to lose 500 to some guy who wants to flip, you know, cards with me. With ace king or something on a pocket eight. So I have no problem limping and seeing what happens. You know, I don't necessarily have to raise every time I enter a pot, so.
Right. I think this is, again, another one of these hands that's different if it's tournament or not. In tournament, I think I'm raising here because I'm trying to chip up and get chips, you know, any way I can. In this cash game, everybody looks deep, right? And I want to play for stacks here, so I, with a hand like this, I want to limp and hope I hit my set and really score. I don't see much value to me in raising here and playing a hand, a middling hand, as you said, against people that some, at least, money means nothing. And really, to be honest, if we're talking about old money, oil barons, .com billionaires, and trust fund kids, you know, some of them may be trying to play poker properly, regardless, but I'm going to say in the back of all of these players' minds, money doesn't mean as much, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I'm going to limp along here, hope I hit my set, and go to war if I do.
Yeah, I really don't mind the limp. I mean, there's a case for both, but and I'm always being aggressive on these hands of the week, and I'm just going to, today I'm going to limp.
All right. All right, so our hero decides to raise to 15, and he says the table's been weird so far. Sometimes a single raise to 15 takes down the pot pre-flop, where lots of people had limped, and other times I've seen 45 pre-flop called in four or five spots with three and four bets as well.
Huh.
So really, we have no idea what's going on this table.
You know, it's weird, too, because, like, any game that's 2-5, generally a $15 raise to open a pot is not even big enough. Now you've got a limper and you're making it 15. So, I mean, I don't really know the chemistry of this game, but you got billionaires and trust fund kids and regular 2-5 games with guys who are cashing their, you know, security, social security checks to play in it, you know, who can't really afford to be playing that game will make it more than 15. So, to me, it doesn't seem like it's a big enough raise, especially given we've got .coms. But I know he said it's taken it down before, but 15 on the open raise would be maybe okay. But now you've got a limper too. I would have to make it more than that if I'm going to raise.
Right. Agree. All right, so it's the cutoff button, and the limper make the call. So forehand of the flop with $62 in the pot, and obviously we're out of position for a couple of these folks. Well, other than the older gentleman, but flop is seven of hearts, six of diamonds, jack of clubs, and it's check to us.
Well, that's a pretty good flop for us. I mean, in a sense that only the jack really essentially beats us. But people who love to just call raises do them with jack 10, ace jack, you know, queen jack. So I don't know. I mean, I guess you got to keep up the ruse since you raised. Not the ruse, but you got to keep up the strength here and maybe put out some sort of bet. You know, I feel like a bet of like 45 might do it, since you've already decided I'm going to play this aggressively. I'm going to play. They don't know you have 8-8. You know what I mean? You could have anything. You could have queens. So I feel like you need to continue with the strength and keep control of this hand. So I think the amount probably is 45. The only way I would check is if I'd have to really get an idea of what the guy behind me is like or the players behind me. You know, I just don't know. I don't get that from this yet. So I might consider checking if I felt like there was a guy behind me who might steal, who didn't really hit it. He's just like a loose guy. If he did bet after I checked and everyone else would fold around to me, I might do a check raise kind of thing to say, hey, that flop didn't scare me, or, you know, whatever. But in this case, I feel like I need to bet. So I probably bet like 40, 45.
I was thinking about half to pop by 30 or so, but...
Well, that might be good, too. I'm just thinking two-thirds. I always like to bet two-thirds, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about right, too. I mean, somewhere a bet is called for, and it's got to be a decent amount.
I think so, yeah. All right, our hero says, it seems like a pretty decent flop for me. One over card, so I lead out for 35.
Yeah, that's about what we're both...
Split the difference between us.
Yeah, that's good.
It says, the player to my immediate right is the only caller. Heads up, pot is now $132, and I have position. And the turn is the 8 of diamonds. So our board now is 7 of hearts, 6 of diamonds, jack of clubs, 8 of diamonds. So we hit our set, but a straight gets there, and it's checked to us once again.
All right, well, we obviously love that card. because really, 9-10's not in the hand. I don't think 9-10 is in this hand. I definitely don't think 9-5 is in this hand. Now, there's the diamonds that are creeping in here, but that's nothing to worry about. I don't want to lose this guy. The only thing we're really afraid of are jacks. I don't know if jacks would have re-raised pre-flop. I don't know if jacks would have re-raised after that flop. They could have been slow playing, but you might want to protect. So I can't go on the idea that they have pocket jacks yet. I don't feel like I've gotten that vibe from anyone yet. So there's 100 and, what we say, 130 in the pot or so?
132.
Yeah. I mean, I'd bet 100 probably.
Okay. Again, I'm going to go about 60. I usually like half the pot, and I kind of want to keep this guy in because I think you're right. There's nothing to indicate that we're behind in this hand. I kind of want to get a call here. I'm not looking to take it down.
Yeah, I might bet less than 100, too. I probably might bet 75 on that. A little more than half, I think I might have bet on that. If I'm thinking clearly and I'm at the table, yeah, maybe about 75 or 70 is probably what I would have bet.
All right, our hero says, very nice card, says me. And I bet 45. He says, like, I'm thinking that was a little too small, that 55 to 60 would have been better. Especially when the villain responds with a raise to 125.
Ooh.
Now I have to readjust the situation. What do we do now?
Yeah, that's scary. I mean, again, I don't put this guy on a straight. I just don't. Maybe they have a smaller set than us. It feels weird that it would be the bigger set, you know. Maybe he doesn't believe us. Maybe he thinks that we had ace king and we're just continuing to fire at it. And he doesn't believe us. I don't know. I think I'm just going to call there though and see if we fill up or see what comes on the end and see if I can make a decision on maybe I could check and control the size of the pot. And if he makes a reasonable bet on the end, I can call it too. I'm not trying to lose my entire $500 on this hand. You know what right. I mean? So maybe I think I'm definitely going to call there. I'm not folding through a set
no,
of eights.
Of course not.
So,
yeah.
But I don't think I'm going to go crazy on him either. There is a possibility that he does have 9-10. I don't think he does, but there is a possibility.
Or jacks,
all
even
that,
though it doesn't
and then
sound
jacks.
Likely.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So the set of jacks could be there. It could be a set of sixes, set of sevens, because they limped along. Not limped along, but they didn't re-raise as pre-flop. So could be set mining and trying to take all our money. So I'm gonna call and see what happens on the river.
Okay. So our hero says, first, I make sure I still have snowmen. Check. Then I look at the board. The eight put out a second diamond, so maybe a backdoor flush. And with the eight, there's now 6-7-8 jack. Ugh, that looks pretty straighty. Let's try to put him on a raising hand here. Two hands jump out at me, 10-9 and jacks. He just called 15 pre-flop, so that sounds 10-9-ish. But does a call of 35 post-flop on a gut shot make sense? I think it does not. Also, if he hit his money card on the turn, why raise? He can't be scared of a flush draw, and me filling up would mean he has to put me on a set or two pair. I don't think that's it. So I'm moving on to the worst-case scenario, jacks. Out of position, I would hope he would re-raise to define his hand and who his opponents were. But if you could also play jacks cheaply, only call a 15. If you get a monster flop, you're set. Pun intended.
Yeah.
If not, you can hit the eject button at the first opportunity. What else is there? Ace-jack, maybe, and now trying to defend? Or maybe he had 7-8 and 2 pair? I'd like to say I decided to use a little pot control, but the truth was I started to get the monster under the bed feeling and decided to just call. I didn't want to re-raise him as he had me covered, and I didn't want to have to decide to call an all-in. I think this is a way-behind or way-ahead scenario.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little longer to get there than we did, but
yeah.
Exactly the same thing, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, the jack-jack thing is scaring me now, just because would I have re-raised pre-flop with jacks there? Probably, maybe, depending on the table, but I may have just called and been in position with him. You know, because there's always so many different ways you could play jacks, so and they're all wrong. So
yeah, they're all bad, right? Yeah. So, I mean, you go back to what I was talking about with the eights. I mean, I would play the jacks the same way, right? I would limp and hope I hit something or got three unders or something and disguise my hand. And then somebody raises. All right, I'm not folding my jacks, but I don't think I want to come alive now and now play a bigger pot with a hand I wasn't comfortable with raising the first time, right?
Yeah.
So I could totally see that. And then, you know, what happened on the flop, we, you know, now we hit cold, right?
Yeah.
And we got somebody still betting, so now it's a walk the dog scenario. So, yeah, I think jacks are very likely the way he's playing it. It doesn't mean that he has those. There's a lot of other hands that I think he could have. Yeah. But I think it's all the more reason not to go crazy right now.
If you had jack-jack and that flop came, given the situation that we're in, would you be compelled to bet, though? To protect?
No, because what's that flop again?
7-6 jack.
Yeah.
I mean, 8-9 is out there.
Yeah, but you know, hey, if somebody has 8-9, that's fine. I mean, really, I'm more thinking about the guy that raised pre-flop, which was us, right?
Right.
I can't put him on 8-9. Okay. So what I'm doing by checking is letting him bet, which I assume he is, and hopefully that'll drive out everybody else, or not drive everybody else out, but I still 8-9 is so far out there for me to imagine to be worried about that I don't really care. So I'm going to let him walk the dog, and you know, if he walks a couple dogs, I'm fine with that too, because you know, there's no flush possibility at this point.
Yeah. Okay. I just was curious about if I had jack-jack and I had been just calling, hoping to hit the set. Because you think if the guy's got aces, kings, or queens, you're not going to lose him, so why wouldn't you just raise him there or whatever and see what...
Well, I mean, I think there's a different story between a check raise there and betting out.
No, he wouldn't check raise. He's behind us, right?
No, this is the guy that limped.
Oh, the jacks are the limping. Oh, he checked to us and then we bet and then he...
Right.
Oh, okay, so check raise. Never mind then.
Yeah, I know. If he's on the other end, yeah.
Oh, I was thinking he was one of the cutoff of the guy or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think jacks are a very real possibility.
Yeah. Now the hand's even more scary to me. I'm scared now.
All right, so we go to the river. Still heads up. Pot is 382 now, and the river is the deuce of clubs. So our board is seven of hearts, six of diamonds, jack of clubs, eight of diamonds, and now the deuce of clubs.
I think the real question is, what would Angela Lansbury do here?
Well, again, no, just turn the TV off.
Is that up on the TV now? I want to ask her deducing.
And our villain bets out 175.
Brutal. Oh, man. Man, we got a set of eights. Only one hand really beats us here. 175, and there's... How much is in the pot?
Oh, boy. 382 before he made his bets.
Oh, man. It's the perfect amount, too.
Yeah, so 550 now.
Oh, man. No, I'm not raising. It's either call or fold here. God, I can't. All right, I can't fold. Maybe it feels like set over set to me, but maybe he's got the smaller set. You know, there's
That's
a chance
a
that he has the sevens
too.
Or sixes. Yeah,
absolutely.
So you got to start giving yourself the hands you can beat, and would they play it that way? I think 7-7
Yeah, because if you have the smaller set here, I mean, you're not scared of us, right?
Right.
You think you're walking the dog as well,
yeah,
right?
You think we got aces or queens or kings, and we're just got overpaired to the whole board and walking the dog.
Yep.
I got to
call. Yeah, I can't fold because of that. I mean, we're worried about this one hand or, I guess, these off-chance straights out there. Definitely can't fold. But the way it's played out, I'm not comfortable raising at all. Particularly in a game that it sounds like we're a little in over our head, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to hurt, I think, because it's the end of the week. This is going to hurt us, I think. But I think we have to call and just hope. I mean, there's sevens, there's sixes you beat.
It's all kinds of hands we beat.
You beat ace-jack. Yeah, when you get down to it, if you're not just beating a bluff, then I think you need to make a call. If you're beating only a bluff, then you have to fold. And I think that there are a lot of hands we could beat here. You could even be beating 7-6 here, and you know what I mean. There's two pair there. You know, some guys would play 7-6 suited for $15, and then flop two pair. Would they play that hand that way the whole way? Probably. They might raise us thinking we have eight. Even if he has ace jack, he might even play it that way, not believing us. I don't think he would. Certainly, it feels like somebody's got a set here, and somebody else has a set here, and one of us is going to get hurt real bad. But I can't raise, so. I'm going to call.
Terrible. All right. Our hero says, if my math is correct, this is the same amount that we both put in the pot, 15 plus 35 plus 125, and it's slightly less than half the pot. He has around 300 to 400 behind, and I have 350 to 375, which would leave me 250 to 300-ish left of my call. Him having a set of jacks here is making more sense to me now, I suppose. I still don't think he has 10-9. Maybe there is some hope he has badly played a preflop monster, ace-ace, king-king. I don't think he's continuing to bet into me on a pure bluff, ace-king, or even maybe 10s. after I called his raise on the turn. Plus, he should have set me in all in the river, not giving me good odds to call. And decided the second set is too good to fold, but not good enough to push, and I call. So, see? Plays exactly like we did.
Yeah,
I know what happens. Our opponent instantly turns over the seven of diamonds, seven of clubs.
Yeah! All right, because it was either going to be I was going to go find my friend who told me to play in the game and kick his ass, or I was going to give him a big hug and buy him a drink. So now, drink's on me.
He says, I show my hand, and he says, you could have doubled up. I think you could have had me. I think, quote, you could have had jacks, but instead I reply, coulda. For the next hour, he just glared at me, creepy, like the Crypt Keeper, but without the horrible puns and cackling laughter. He says, I was able to hit two more good hands, a profit, including the 1-3 stupidity earlier of almost 900, and got out of there before I did something stupid again. He wants to know, did I miss value on the river or turn with a raise?
We totally, yeah. Well, at least the river part.
I mean, obviously you missed the value, right?
Yeah.
The way you know how the hand is now.
Yeah.
But the way it played, no, I don't think you should have been doing anything differently than you did.
No, I mean, that when he check-raised us, maybe then you get it in if you didn't come to the conclusion that jacks were possible. Well, because you came to that conclusion, you can't just put all your money in there and hope that, you know, you had to really try to find some more information out of him. And since he wasn't willing to shove, it felt like he was a little nervous about what he had, too. So I think he played it right. I don't think he lost. I mean, you lost money in the sense that if he said he wouldn't have folded if you shoved, and you shoved, you would have made money, but you obviously can't play it that way.
Yeah, it's all results-oriented.
Yeah, can't do that.
And really, to be honest, the guy saying you could have doubled me up, he's saying that immediately after seeing that he lost, right?
Yeah, exactly.
He's not playing back the hand like we are and understanding that we're worried that he might have jacks there and why we're cautious. So I think if the Crypt Keeper goes home and thinks about this, He takes back that comment.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, moral of the story is make sure Angela Lansbury is there to help you out. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables. Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.